you know, the first thing I said is like, are you working with an interior designer or a built environment specialist? If somebody is going to look at a virtual environment and wanting to enhance it, a lot of it can be translated in terms of how you develop concepts.
Welcome to Barriers to Entry, the podcast where every episode we get into it with the leaders, the designers, the early adopters, and the influencers who are driving innovation in the architecture and design industry. It's the metaverse, it's AI, it's the blockchain, and it's all happening here. I'm Bobby Bonet, an executive vice president at Sandow Design Group. And as always, I'm joined by Digby co-founders, Andrew Lane and Tessa Bain.
Hey, Bobby, that's very literal of you to call us all out like that. I really appreciate it.
How are you, Tess?
I'm good. I'm excited for today's episode and getting into it. But, you know, before we do that, we are on episode 27. Yeah, but I'm excited not only for this episode, but also kind of some fun stuff that we've got in our pipeline.
We're trying out a bit of a new format to try and get into some more conversations that we hope will be appealing and exciting for our audience. But we're also lining up some new guests, including what I'm kind of excited about, our first repeat guests ever on the show. I think that makes them friends of the podcast officially. Is that fair to say?
How many appearances makes you a friend of the pod? Is it three?
Two. I think it's two.
I feel like it's just one.
I'll draw back the cloak. We have Jamie Derringer coming on a few episodes from now. We have Amanda Schneider, who will help us wrap up 2023. And then we're thinking about kicking off 2024 with a bit of a call-in show, a hotline show, to get that user-generated content going.
Exactly. So Bobby's going to be posting his personal cell phone. That's what we decided on, right?
I think so. I think we're not going to spring for the Google hotline number.
Yeah, so everyone can just call Bobby.
Or text.
Yeah, let him know what you want to hear about. Let him know, you know, any real gripes that you have. I think it really does air any grievances at all coming into the new year. A bit of a Festivus feel to it.
I was going to say, for the last episode of the year, that's very fitting.
That's going to be exciting. So I'm really excited to see where this all goes. But maybe we should get into our conversation with our wonderful guest today.
Yeah, joining us today on Barriers to Entry is Elizabeth Jimenez. Elizabeth is a senior project designer working at MKDA. I first encountered Elizabeth at the Interior Design Giants and Rising Stars Conference in Encinitas, California, back in February, where Elizabeth joined in on a spirited debate with a room full of principals from Interior Design Giants firms about the future of interactive, virtualized design. And since then, I know Elizabeth has continued to put critical thought against what the future of design looks like, especially as it relates to immersive tech and the metaverse. And we're excited to welcome her on today. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon.
Great to have you on today. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you. I love your idea of having people call in. I do think that it's more fitting for a podcast of like Web3 conversations to make it more interactive with the users, with the listeners in this case.
You can call in.
I will.
Yeah.
We encourage it. Please do.
I can't wait.
This concept is seconds old and it's already got an endorsement.
We already have somebody on the line.
Please hold.
Yes.
Absolutely an exciting start.
Elizabeth, we're going to circle back to that moment at Giants that Bobby brought up there just in a bit. But before we get there, can you tell us a bit about your seat at MKDA and how you got there? You don't have a formal role as an innovation leader, but we take it that you may have an informal responsibility related to being a champion for forward-looking design.
Yeah, of course. My interest in technology and innovation actually reaches beyond Web3. And I have always looked at technology as a tool that is needed and essential for advancement in society and in general. So when I came into my role at MKDA, they were well aware of my interest because I also teach several softwares in New York City in several colleges. But specific to Web3, before MKDA, I had already started putting together a preliminary business plan on how interior design firms can get started on assisting their clients who may be interested in virtual environments. And I had also written an article with some guidance for designers who may be curious about the platform. And since my time at MKDA, which is now a year and a half, we've developed two NFT collections, one of them which we submitted to the MAD Awards. And thank you for providing that opportunity. And we also leverage AI tools in our creative process on a daily basis.
That's amazing. How did you find that, you know, that that kind of work materialized at the firm? Like, what were sort of the early rumblings that got you started on saying, this is, you know, these are technologies that we should be looking at and exploring as a part of our process?
Yeah, I think in general, I am the type of person that is less about my experience and where I come from and more about who I service. And I believe that every individual who interacts with virtual environment should be considered, not just individuals who interact with physical environments. So that being in my DNA as someone who measures their success by the amount of difference I make in the environments that I enhance, I've always wanted to make sure that we consider, again, every individual or brand or entity who is experiencing environments, no matter whether they are virtual or physical.
Love that. And as a part of the early work that you've been doing, you also had a chance to consult on a project that was launched by acquaintance of the podcast, Carly Slocum. We had Carly
one-time guest,
fantastic guest, maybe a future acquaintance, sorry, but we had her on as a part of our Neocon conversation. You were doing some of that work, collaborating on her virtual showroom. Can you talk about like how you approach an opportunity and an experience like that? And given what you just shared with us about, you know, thinking about your users, what is it that you're setting out to achieve when you're getting engaged in that kind of type of work?
Yeah, I think the purpose is the key. First, I get really excited when a manufacturer understands the potential of a virtual environment and what that could mean or bring in terms of benefits to their clients or their users. And primarily, as I mentioned, understanding the purpose of that space, which is also a consideration already for physical spaces, is something that you need to start with. And it is crucial to also understand what the user would also be getting out of it, which depends on many things, of course. But you're obviously in a digital space, not really eating or sleeping necessarily. But you can think of it specifically, I think, as a starting point, what are these users doing when they visit your website? And I think this could be something that is translated or enhances that experience. And for 3form, is they're having people visit their website because they need to learn about their product, their materials, or source for the materials. And in the case of them, they have a unique story that they want to translate in the virtual space, and that is also affecting or impacting positively the environment because they want to minimize the amount of materials that designers request by allowing the space to help them visualize their needs a little bit better than just looking at or scrolling down a website through images. So I think that the mission being a direct impact on our physical environment, it really truly is something that is thoughtful. It goes beyond just somebody just visiting a virtual space just to have a good time.
How did that collaboration kick off? I'm sure there are other manufacturers thinking about launching a virtual showroom, and they'd love a designer from who's interested in the space and who's got experience, just like yourself, Elizabeth, to hop on board and offer some consultative services. Did you have a previous relationship with Carly and 3form? Did 3form reach out to MKDA and it came across your desk? Like, what spurred that opportunity for you to work with the 3form team?
Actually, a friend to be of this podcast, Amanda.
Oh boy,
not yet. She recommended Carly to reach out to me because she knew of my interest. And the conversation really started just with 3form asking questions on how they could improve the experience. And, you know, the first thing I said is like, okay, like, are you working with an interior designer or like a built environment specialist? And she was like, no, actually, which, you know, makes no sense because we already are the experts of built environments. So if somebody is going to look at a virtual environment and wanting to enhance it, a lot of it can be translated in terms of how you developed concepts.
especially when you're trying to mimic a built environment in the way that, you know, that 3form is in this example, right? Like the built environment being replicated and you know, feeling real to people was such a key element to the success.
Yes, but then in conversations, we also say that for somebody to want to visit a virtual environment, it should also have components that are not able to be found in a physical environment. You want it to be more immersive, and you want it to be more interactive, and you want it to be so that somebody is excited to come back for it. Sort of like when you visit a new city. If we could even travel to different planets, we don't know what to expect.
You did say this before. Carly was hoping to have a bar be a unique part of the environment, if I recall the interview correctly. So
we haven't talked about that yet, but we'll see.
I'm curious, actually, Andrew and Tess, in your work with manufacturers thinking about virtualized spaces, how often does that challenge that Lisbeth just mentioned come up, where a partner hasn't considered bringing in a specialist in the built environment to consult on a project?
I think that one of the interesting things about it is the playbook is really getting written, and you see that as you come across these different projects, because some people will have access to that type of talent in-house. Some of the organizations that are building these environments from a technology standpoint on behalf of clients come from a background of architecture and design themselves. So they show up with both the technical as well as the design acumen. And then in some cases, it's the complete Wild West. Everyone kind of starts their innovation journey from a different place is really what we found. And that's a big part of what we try and do, is help knit those things together. The thing that we always try to encourage is just to be out there and starting to try, and not putting yourself in a position where if you get the opportunity to do things a little bit differently and a little bit better, you're in the position where you can. And obviously being able to bring in someone with Lisbeth's talent at that moment was an important thing for that project. And, you know, that's always a good sign when your project can pivot and adjust. Did I say too much? Did I say not enough, Tess?
Actually, you nailed it, per usual.
Thanks.
And very succinct.
Oh my gosh.
This is Amy Devers, host of Clever. My podcast brings you conversations you're not going to hear anywhere else with the visionaries and creative forces who shape our world and culture. It's a compelling mix of raw candor and honest shop talk that reveals the humanity behind the design of the world around us. Clever is a proud member of the Surround Podcast Network. Head over to surroundpodcast.com or follow Clever wherever you get your podcasts.
From a designer perspective, I feel like a lot of people don't know that they already know a lot more than they need, you know, to get started in the platform or be able to cater to virtual environments if their clients have that specific request.
I'm curious too, Lisbeth, you know, when you're working on these projects, you said that it has to have things that are familiar and that kind of root us in physical space so that those skills translate. But you said also has to have something immersive and experiential that maybe they wouldn't experience in the physical world. Like, what's that balance for you, that or that sweet spot in terms of the percentage that you bring of each to a project?
It really depends on the brand and the story that they want to generate, or the outcome for what that experience is for the user. And again, it's sort of like how we treat our clients with physical environments. Every space needs to be considered differently because the users are different. So we, you know, you can go as far as, you know, putting a game in a virtual environment. But if that's not what your user is expecting, or the best thing for them to get out of for your environment, then that's not what you should do. You know what I mean? So there has to be a balance, but it also, it's really dependent on the, you know, that purpose that you're trying to achieve with your space.
I appreciate like the lack of bias in the approach that you're bringing to this. The game example that you brought up kind of triggered me, because when you speak to a lot of people who would consider themselves to be Web3 experts, they would really suggest to you that any kind of a space would need to be a game in order to have any kind of repeat use viability or interest. I'm more contrary to that opinion, and I really enjoy the point of view that you're bringing forward here, which is that, you know, every experience is a little bit different, and you can't really say, oh, it's game mechanics that are going to solve all of the problems of making a space usable and making a space to be something that will have the stickiness where people will want to come back. Have you encountered that thinking at all?
Oh my God, yes. It is like, there's also like the reason why a lot of people are hesitant to try like VR goggles. It's just like, try it. You know, it's not like you're just going to start playing a game automatically, you know? Like, you can go to a gallery and, you know, purchase art through a virtual environment. How is that not better than going through a website? Or like scrolling down through Amazon and buying something. You could have a retail experience that is more immersive.
I had posed a little question on my LinkedIn page. Not the LinkedIn follow of the week. Jamie Derringer, 26 straight weeks now. LinkedIn follow of the week. But I had posted on LinkedIn, just heading into our conversation with you today, Elizabeth, about just whether folks have strong opinions about the future of trade shows. And wouldn't you know what people do? They have, I think, probably for the last 3 years, you know, ever since March of 2020, and they still do today. We received several comments on the post. I got a whole bunch of DMs from individuals who were sharing, I think, really interesting predictions for 2024, ranging from the types of introductions we'll see in 2024, all the way through to the new technologies we may see rolled out at trade shows and ancillary to trade shows in 2024. I'd love to start, though, before I share some of those predictions that I received in my DMs, with where your head is at as it relates to the future of trade shows. And your seat as a designer who's thinking about innovation, somebody who clearly, we talk with a lot of designers who have given up on the concept of the metaverse, or maybe not given up, but have pivoted their thinking as it relates to the metaverse. You're not there, clearly. Where's your head at as we start to think about 2024 and what, you know, trade shows in particular will look like and where you're seeing opportunity as it relates to the innovation of trade shows?
As I began to have conversations with 3form specifically, their environment is going to be sort of separate and I guess an extension of their website. And then I started to think, why can't we have one, let's call it virtual trade show city that I could potentially go to 3form. And then on my map, I'm going to toggle to Manhattan if I want to look at carpet or go to All Steel for furniture, all in one place. I think that enhances my sourcing experience from a virtual or digital perspective, as opposed to me clicking out, going to a website, or also I'm visiting their virtual showroom and I'm getting to interact with their product a little bit more. And maybe there is a person there to assist. Could be like an avatar, could be a computer, or could be somebody actually live that can walk me through the showroom. And this is at a time that I'm not necessarily able to visit a physical showroom, which we're often not. We don't have time to go to like three different showrooms and live in three different places. But a virtual showroom, I think, would facilitate and provide access specifically to more showrooms opportunity or experiences for designers like myself. And the way I saw it is like Material Bank, how we have different material vendors in one place. We're able to create a material palette and we're able to sort of order stuff directly from there. Imagine that in a more enhanced way.
I think one of the big enhancements that's interesting in that, particularly in the context of trade show, is you have a limited floor plan in a trade show. And when you start to talk about digital materials, like you can really customize an item. Like you can see that chair with the high back in this in the bar stool format, in all the different fixtures and finishes.
Exactly.
Right? Like I think that's something that you'll never achieve in any trade show. The Merchandise Mart is a big place, but it's not big enough for every single one of their vendors' complete line of products and variations on those products. So I think that's somewhere that not only is the kind of vision that you're proposing possible, but also I think that's where the physical digital interaction becomes really interesting too, because there still becomes a point in time when you want to sit in the chair.
Of course.
You want to touch the product.
Yeah, we're still downloading 3D files from the website. We're still looking at or trying to find the installation images that are perfect for a specific project. So that's just going to, you know, make that a little bit better. But also taking a step back and not just thinking about like a trade show, but also like, you know, vendors all the time, they try to meet with, you know, the team here at MKDA. And very often we have a hard time, you know, getting together or thinking of like whether we should do a Zoom or a, you know, an actual showroom visit. If you had the opportunity to have a virtual showroom, we can all attend, that would just be more interactive and a better experience than just a Zoom call, just, you know, scrolling through like a PowerPoint presentation, in my opinion.
Well, even think about the extended experience of a trade show. Like you go to NeoCon and you'll come home with 1,000 photos on your phone. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're going through then later going, well, what was that new chair that, you know, Kielhauer, you showed us today? And like you have to find that on your phone. Wouldn't it just be such an amazing extended experience to be able to kind of log back in, see a representation of where you kind of went? You're like, okay, I knew I walked in, I went left. That's something that I think that not only extends the value for these brands after they've invested so much in their physical space, but is actually a resource and a tool for the design community.
And it's also a marketing tool. When you think about it, one of the points that I always bring is that there was a time where people were refusing to get Instagram. And they was like, oh no, I'm never going to get on Instagram. But now, if you have a business or, you know, just as an individual, if you're not present in social media, you're just not present. So you're not going to be visible to your potential clients and users. And there's going to be a time where in virtual environments, if you don't have a presence, then you're pretty much going to be obsolete, because if that's where people are spending the time in, and that's how you can reach new clients, then you should have a presence so that you can cater to those users.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
We're still kind of like at a very baseline level of technology when it comes to bringing showrooms to life right now. Something that was a little discouraging, I think, to me on the back of NeoCon was I was following, shout out ThinkLab, ThinkLab's trend spotters, and their virtual trend spotter, I think, had noted in her follow-up.
A dozen people who use Matterport, right?
Yeah, there was a reference to Matterport, and then just a little bit less of a lean in to the virtualized experience in 2023 versus 2022. So it almost feels like we're a little bit further away. But something that I thought was really, really prescient that Andrew, you had brought up in a prior conversation, and I think Elizabeth, you feel the same way, is that this is really just ultimately the 3Dification of the internet, is thinking about how do we kind of enliven a virtual experience in terms of how you interact with a brand. A natural extension of the internet for a brand in this industry is creating a virtual experience through a showroom. In that, how do you interact with product in context? How are you harding something? How are you marketing your product in a way that's not just a flat product landing page with a PDF download, which is not a very fun experience, and then packaging up a PDF and emailing it? Like, this is really just kind of taking the next step. And Andrew, how long have we been in 2D internet now? 30 years?
I think the next step in the breakthrough will be when people give in or have more access to the VR goggles, the wearables, because that changes everything. You know, going into a metaverse with your computer, it's a very different experience than actually wearing a goggle that is actually going to make it immersive and make you feel like you're there. So once people have more access to that, I don't know if they have to become more affordable, more accessible. I think that's going to change everything.
How do you feel about augmented reality, just the idea of the digital overlay in that same kind of context?
I think it's something that is going to help us in the development of our, you know, general society and advancement in the future. When you have the augmented reality assistant that you may not necessarily need as much, and we will potentially have less waste in our industry. That's my hope.
Andrew and Lizbeth mentioned wearables and goggles. You recoiled for half a second. I think we've irrespective of our collective opinions on wearables, it's definitely been, I think, a recurring theme for our guests. Wearables do not seem to be in vogue in terms of adoption, whether it's, you know, user adoption or designing for wearables. But Lizbeth, something that was interesting that you'd shared with me when we had met at a coffee shop a couple weeks ago, which I hadn't thought about before, was designing for spaces that allow for a more fulfilling experience with goggles on. I remember the first time I put on goggles, the worst part for me was, okay, I'm going to be standing in a room with a coffee table over here and human beings over there and a TV set over here. And what happens when I trip and fall and make a fool of myself, or even worse, break my ankle? And you're thinking now, how do I design rooms that facilitate an experience where I can actually feel comfortable with a headset on?
Yeah, there's so many things that need to be considered. How you experience the virtual environment that you're designing, you're creating, you need to think about the user and how they are interacting with the physical space around them while they experience this virtual space. We should be developing spaces and guidance for people to be able to wear these things, whether it's in a residential setting or our corporate setting. You know, if you're in a conference room, you need so-and-so distance from your table to the wall. Because people will be wearing these things for meetings or whatever it is, they need to be considered. But also the psychology of it, how people feel when they are in front of other people while they're wearing it, I think it's something that not many people think about. Because if one, this is the first time you're wearing it and there's a lot of people around you, you're going to be hesitant to even want to try it. Because there are instances that virtual environments should be done when you're like in a private space, because the point of experiencing a virtual environment is so that you're not able to be there physically, right? Or, you know, unless you're like playing a game with three other people. But if the purpose is to visit a space where you can physically be there, then you should have a private space to do that. It should be acoustically sound, that you have enough clearance so that you're safe and your wellness is considered. I was actually talking recently with a major foam pod manufacturer, and the conversation started with like, what are my clients thinking about or considering when they think about foam booths or foam pods, whatever you want to call them. And I said, actually, I don't know if anybody's asking this. My clients aren't, but I'm curious, are you considering to have a pod be specific for somebody with VR goggles to go in the pod? Like, we go into a room to have a Zoom call.
Yeah, we're not having Zoom calls in the middle of a busy floor in an office space, that's for sure.
No, exactly. I mean, the other thing that'll be interesting is it seems there's a real surge towards the idea of making sure that goggles have more ability to be spatially aware of the room around you. Mm-hmm. Like, we definitely saw that with the Apple prototype. We've seen that with the latest Meta headset as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see where some of these things net out. But I think that, to your point, there's so much that needs to be done to make sure that people feel comfortable being a part of these experiences, because obviously they're not great experiences when Bobby's worried his ankle's going to break in front of a room full of people.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, Bobby, you might just have a bit of a stage fright thing, and that's not a goggles thing, but
it all came crashing on me at once. Yeah. Goggles went on.
Yeah. Now I can really justify those fears.
Exactly.
So Bobby, is it about that time to jump into our plugs?
I think so. Lizbeth, as you may know, we like to head into the home stretch of each episode of Barriers to Entry by asking our guests to share what they're up to, whether it's personal endeavors or what you're up to at MKDA. So anything you'd like to share, that you'd like to plug for the Barriers to Entry listeners?
Yeah. So basically, my position as it relates to when somebody asks whether we should care to spend time and energy designing digital environments, I say that going back to my core value, we need to consider every individual, whether they're spending time in virtual spaces or physical spaces.
Yeah, inclusivity in design.
Mm-hmm. Who are we to judge someone who rather spend time in a virtual environment, whether it is to socialize, spend time in an event, work, or meet somebody? If a firm or an individual who has the ability to enhance environments is claiming to care about equity, inclusivity, and diversity, and if you say that you care about these things and not necessarily consider the people that are spending time in digital environments or virtual environments, then you're contradicting yourself. Just ask, you know, who is your user and who are you catering to for the environments that you're enhancing?
Love that. Well, this was such a great conversation. I mean, I think it's really cool to just have, you know, your point of view sitting in the firm, being a part of, you know, all of these different types of projects. It's always so important for us to talk to people who are actually practicing things live on the show. And I did really, like, for me, a big takeaway was just the degree to which you are passionate about devices. You know, you are passionate about wearables, and I think that it's exciting to know that there are people in the design industry who are really pushing on that area, because there is an awful lot of opportunity for more inclusive design, for better design, for more thinking to come to that space to make it something that's more accessible to people. And that was something that was a big takeaway for me. I don't know, how did you guys feel, Tess, Bobby? Big things pop out for you?
One of the coolest kind of takeaways I got from this conversation is that designers of physical spaces, like, your skills translate here. So, you know, there's a need, Elizabeth, you brought up, to think about the way that we're designing spatially with function and flow in these digital spaces, and designers are the perfect people to be able to deliver on that.
The thread throughout is really reframing the question. We've poo-pooed the metaverse for the last 9 or 10 months in some way, shape, or form, but thinking about instead, you know, the metaverse in the way it's been redefined by our friends at Meta, and instead thinking about it as the 3Dification of the internet, thinking about ways in which we can design for a more fulfilling wearables experience rather than kind of chalking it up as a niche tool, thinking about how you can create for a future of trade show experience that is augmenting the physical trade show rather than replacing the physical trade show. I think, Elizabeth, you kind of bring that angle to each of the challenges as we think about, you know, innovation and design and the future of design. That struck me, you know, the first time we had a conversation, that certainly struck me back in at the Giants event back in February. I think that's critically important to not lose focus when it comes to kind of pushing the ball forward here, especially your position as a rising designer at a firm like MKDA, and then just as a voice in this industry.
And I think not necessarily part of this conversation, but something that I'm just curious about. Have you had any conversations regarding, like, our relationship with artificial intelligence, specifically as a whole?
Definitely. And I think it's one that's going to be coming very much to the forefront in the next short while.
So before we wrap today, I just wanted to end off on a question that we have for all of our guests on the show, Barriers to Entry. And that is, what advice would you give or resources that you would share with our listeners out there who are looking to learn more or even get started in this space?
For designers, if you're interested in exploring 3D virtual environments, you can take 3 easy steps. And if you want to know what they are, just DM me on, like, LinkedIn. I'm happy to guide you. If you're already using Revit, that's really what you need to start with. So happy to answer any questions and send you these steps if you want. And lastly, going back to AI, I would like to urge for people to have better relationships with technology in general, especially with artificial intelligence. We often don't have the best relationship with one another because of competition or power or greed. And I would hope that doesn't mirror our relationship with artificial intelligence, as it will probably become a sentient being, in my opinion. I think, remember, everything that you do, as I do, try to define your success with the amount of difference you can make for whoever you service.
Very cool. And say please to your Alexa. Please and thank you.
Yeah. Say please. Be nice to the robots. But one of the best answers to that question we've had, especially the tease to send Elizabeth a DM for the top three or the first three steps. I love that, Elizabeth.
Well, you might be the first guest we've ever had that literally asked the listeners to slide into your DMs. And
I'm typing my LinkedIn message right now.
Yeah, I am a mentor at heart, and I always aim to inspire and guide people with what I know. If it's going to be making the world a better place, you know, if people do what I do, I think it's going to be better for everyone.
So a big thank you to the Barriers to Entry production team, our producers Wise Grisette and Rob Schulte, and everyone else back at the Studio by Sandow Pod Cave. I know you love that, Tess. Mm-hmm. Barriers to Entry is part of the Surround Podcast Network. Make sure you go to surroundpodcasts.com. That's podcasts with an S. Smash the follow button and join us next time as we continue to break down the barriers to entry.
I'm impressed with the way that Bobby's enunciating his S's on that.
Thank you.